Coming up on Simply Superior.
You're as cold as ice.
All right, you don't need another weather report. But with all the cold and snow, could this be the year for the ice caves? And what to do about too much snow on Spirit Mountain?
I think all we really need to sort of sort everything out is about $1 billion.
Plus, could the antics at a Superior car dealership be the makings of a TV series?
After a week or two of seeing the things that happen there, I'm like, I would love to watch this as a show. No one's ever done one about a car dealership. Why not?
Those stories and an invitation for you to share your gift-giving memories after this. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and it's a winter wonderland in the Northland, but not if there's no snowcross, right? We'll talk about all things to do for fun and recreation in the area with two media people who know everything about what's going on, as well as the juicy stories behind it. My guests in the studio are Connie LeMay, the longtime editor of Lake Superior Magazine. Welcome, Connie.
Thank you.
And Paul Lundgren, the, what is it, founder, editor-in-chief, guru?
Grand poobah.
I thought something like that, of Perfect Duluth Day. Welcome, Paul.
Hey, hey.
And our original idea was to talk about outdoor activities, or mostly outdoor, an entertainment primer or something like that. But there's so much political stuff going behind all this, we can't help but, dish. So what's the most fun thing you can tell somebody to do in the coming weeks? Now, it's still not winter. We all know that, right?
Technically, yeah.
Right. But, you know, we do want to encourage people to get out there and do stuff.
I actually did go to something that it would be fun to encourage people to do. Many people know Marsha Hales from Park Point.
Of course, yeah.
And her...
Nathan Bentley.
That's right. She had... not now. So she had decided...
The previous Nathan Bentley.
She had decided to not do her light display this year after many years. She actually had a kind of a semi-retirement last year.
She wasn't
going to, and then she did it again, and then decided to retire the display at her Park Point home, which, with talking to Marsha, turns out to be a good thing because of the high water of the lake, a lot of the lakeshore that she used to have some of the lights on just isn't there right now. It's all water. So the good news is that she had made an arrangement with Glenn Sheen. So Glenn Sheen picked up all of her light display and kind of the charming things that people so loved about it, the magic penguins and the arch and the shooting star and the angel representing her husband. And those are now officially lit at Glenn Sheen. So last night was the first kind of public walkthrough night that they had. So I went over there, and it's surprising how well it's integrated into the space there. It's also lovely because, like at Marsha's, it's right near the water. So last night the waves were pounding, and you could hear the waves as you were walking through the light display. And that now will be going on through Christmas, I think through the 28th. Unfortunately, except for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, they won't be having it on those 2 days. But other than that, it's free, unlike the house tours. So if you want to additionally go and see the extra trees in the Glenn Sheen Mansion, then you'll have to pay for the house tour. But in keeping with Marsha's tradition, they're allowing the lights to be seen for free for people to just come and do walkthroughs. And it was a treat last night to hear little kids squeal and go, "That's amazing!" You know, so it is a nice display and worth taking in.
Right. And I should point out that we are talking right now, or we're recording this on Tuesday. So last night would have been Monday, but as you said, it's going on through Christmas. And is there a pattern there that if you come up with a big enough display, somebody else will take it off your hands?
I don't know. In the case of Bentleyville, I think he sought out a bigger place because he wanted to go bigger, and the neighbors were getting a little nervous about the bigger thought pattern. But with Marcia's, hers has always been kind of a little more muted. It's certainly more than we would have had in our backyard, but it is charming, and it does blend well with the Glen Sheen. It isn't jarring. Mm-hmm. It's nice.
It's interesting, too, that you point out that the high water had an effect on her having it. We just had a show a couple of weeks ago about erosion on Park Point, and, you know, it just goes back to how environment affects everything, of course, in the whole world, but particularly around here and the kind of crazy weather we've been having lately. Paul, what do you got there?
Well, this weekend, the Nutcracker from Minnesota Ballet is probably the big deal on Friday, and on Saturday, Chris Monroe has a pop-up shop at Hemlock's Leatherworks. Chris Monroe, of course, the cartoonist.
Monkey with the tool belt.
Yeah.
Soon to be on Netflix by you.
Did you say
that by Netflix?
Netflix, yep.
Oh, but did you say Netflix by you?
Near
you. Oh, right.
Okay. Us dinosaurs used to go to these things called movie theaters, and it was soon to be in a theater by you.
Okay.
You really do have a look on your face like, what is he talking about? Okay.
Well, you know, everything has, there's all these, so many cultural things to keep track of that I thought there was a new Netflix package called Netflix by you.
Right, in the bayou, yeah.
In the bayou.
Right. You know, seriously, as a, I am a baby boomer, I will say that. And,
okay, boomer.
And I was going to say how you do have to watch your language, but I mean in terms of your idioms. And, you know, a hip statement I picked up about 20 or 30 years ago was drop a dime, right? So we're going to drop a dime on you, which means call the cops. Well, that refers to something called a payphone, which is totally foreign to anybody born in the last 20, 30 years. So, all right, just moving right along. So, Chris Monroe's pop-up.
Monroe's pop-up, that's at Hemlock's Leatherworks in the Lincoln Park Craft District. So a lot going on there throughout the weekend. But the big thing I'm looking forward to, this has become kind of a annual tradition, looking past Christmas to New Year's Eve, is at Wusso's Concert Cafe every year. They bring in something like 16 bands to perform over the course of, I think it's 24 bands over 16 hours. It starts at 6:30 in the morning and just one band after another until the new year comes up. And so I go in there and have coffee, have breakfast, have lunch, have a beer, have dinner, play cribbage, set up shop in the corner, and, you know, chat with folks and tap my toes, and you know, it's a day-long party.
Okay.
I don't usually make it all. I came close once, but I've never made it all the way from 6:30 a.m. past midnight. So I've never seen every band perform throughout the day. Usually I'll go out in the middle of the day, too, and get a haircut, come back, that kind of thing. But
it's proving there's no end of good stuff to do. Our guests in the studio are Connie LeMay of Lake Superior Magazine and Paul Lundgren of Perfect Duluth Day. People, if they hadn't heard of Lake Superior Magazine, they could probably figure it out as a magazine about Lake Superior, right? But Perfect Duluth Day, you've been around for, a decade?
16 and a half years.
Okay.
Yeah. And quite the opposite of Lake Superior Magazine. It's enormously complicated to explain what Perfect Duluth Day is. Yeah. Whenever I get a feel for it, it changes, too. You know, we've gone through a number of phases. And initially, when it started in 2003, that was a time when, in the realm of social media, there was Friendster and MySpace. And so, seriously, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, none of those things existed when Perfect Duluth Day started. And so at that time, Perfect Duluth Day was kind of a Facebook for Duluth. It was very different than it is now. It was, you know, hundreds of people with an account posting two-sentence things about something that happened today, or some people just go on and put a Muppets video on, you know, all sorts of random things. But by virtue of that timing and it being successful at doing that, it sort of transformed over time to now it's very little of that, but still some of it. plus some sort of magazine-style journalism, plus a grab bag of videos and other Duluth-related things, plus an event calendar that tells you everything that's going on from today to infinity.
Right.
So that wasn't bad. I summed it up in like a minute and a half, huh?
What was interesting is you said when it started out, social media wasn't what it is today. I don't think we called it social media. I don't think we knew it was social
media. There probably wasn't a term social media. And in fact, in 2003, when it started, it was a blog on a platform called Blogger, which is a horrible platform. It was not an attractive website at all. It was super clumsy to use. If you wanted to do something as simple as post a photograph, the second post that ever happened on the website was a long description about how to post a photograph because the platform wouldn't let you do it specifically. You had to use a second platform to get your photo uploaded to use it on the website. So as a blog, no one knew what a blog was really when it started. Blogs had been around for a few years, but it wasn't a common term or common knowledge what a blog was. Within about a year of that, Merriam-Webster's word of the year was blog, and blogs became a big thing. And then we didn't have to explain to people what a blog was anymore. And I shouldn't say we, because I actually wasn't around really then. I was kind of a contributor to it much the same way anyone else would be at that time. Two guys, Barrett Chase and Scott Luntz, started the site in 2003. And so I've only been involved in an official capacity since 2009.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's 10 years. So I said everybody should know what Lake Superior Magazine or figure out what it is, but do tell us a bit about it, Connie.
It's about Lake Superior. How's that for simple compared? No, the magazine's actually been around since 1979 and has kind of expanded its focus. It was mainly a Twin Ports Duluth Superior Magazine when it first started, and now, of course, we cover all four shores, the Ontario, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota. And it's kind of a blend. It reminds me a lot of old Life magazines or Look magazine. We have a major photo feature every issue. We do lifestyle stories. We do news stories. We do one of our stories, speaking of that, coming up is going to be on high water and how that affects everything from shoreline property to the economics of the area, both good and bad, the ups and downs of high water, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So some of it's, more newsy reporting or environmental related reporting. So it's kind of a grab bag, but definitely anchored around the Lake Superior region.
Right. So that segues into one of these newsy / environmental / outdoors things going on. And I don't expect you guys to be the experts. If you are, that's fine. In Duluth, they have a kind of issue going on with Spirit Mountain and the Snow Cross, right? So who wants to explain what the Snow Cross is to our eager listeners out there?
Oh, boy. So they bring in the snowmobiles, and I guess they race and do obstacle courses and things like that. Is that what happens?
Sounds good enough to me.
It is. It has significance because it's really the first major one on the circuit for the year. So it has a good, firm place within the full national circuit.
Right. In all seriousness, people do this across the country, and this is one of the venues. But it didn't happen this year.
Yeah. And I guess the crux of it seems to be that, you know, it's a major event in Duluth. It draws in a lot of people. It brings in a lot of money. But Spirit Mountain takes on the risk. And when it doesn't happen, it puts them in a tough financial position. And it's, you know, Spirit Mountain has always been in its own tough financial position. So it's, put the ski hill somewhat at risk. I mean, the city has bailed them out and will continue to because Spirit Mountain's too big to fail.
Mm-hmm. It's an authority, isn't it? Or kind of works like an authority, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So it does get public funding. That is part of it. The idea is to bring people here. It's not just to keep the mountain happy or something
yes.
like that.
Yes, yep.
And those people are coming from elsewhere, and they're spending money here. On the other hand, you get numbers like $200,000 that the city has to do for a bailout, and it gets people a little bit excited. Rightfully
yeah.
so? Or
I think all we really need to sort of sort everything out is about $1 billion. I think Spirit Mountain will be in fine shape. The Lake Superior Zoo will be in fine shape. We'll be able to fix up the Central Administration Building, maybe redo the Cozy.
There you go.
There's the $1 billion right there.
Pastor at Stenson, I guess I should refer to it as. But yeah.
Historical
but when you add them all up, about $1 billion would probably put everything, sort everything out, I think.
On the other hand, we had Bruce Thompson on from Superior a couple weeks ago, and he was actually looking with Indy at the Duluth tourism tax and wishing they could have the same in Superior. It's a very small amount, and having a bit of trouble with the Republican-dominated legislature to allow such a business district to happen.
Mm.
So it's not indigenous. I mean, look, this is all over the country. I mean, it's not indigenous in the United States. There are taxes. There are tourism taxes. There are incentive taxes.
That's kind of news to me. I thought Duluth was very unique in all of its problems and that other cities overflowed with money and had streets paved with gold and no potholes. And you're saying that's not true.
Sorry to disillusion you.
Rather unfortunate.
But yeah, not true in Superior. And they look at it as something that has worked in Duluth. Again, kind of ironically, because Bruce is on one week, and then the next week people are being critical of use of that tax in Duluth.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The controversy for Duluth has been, how is that earmarked and what is that for? And I'm supportive of it because it does, it's kind of like the legacy fund for Minnesota. It does support a lot of different things that are important to Duluth as a tourism base. But it also, I also have to kind of smile a little bit when we call it a tourism tax because I eat at restaurants, you know, so it really is a tax that we've agreed to have on ourselves in order to use for certain things to promote the city as a whole and the area as a destination as a whole.
Well, I think something that's unique about Duluth and Superior is how integrated our different disciplines, industries, activities are. And so, look, for anybody coming from out of town, you did not do Duluth if you don't see a boat going through the lift bridge, okay? I'm sorry. You said, hey, I went to Duluth. You see a boat going underneath the lift bridge? No, go back. But what you have here is this is heavy industry, right? That boat has nothing to do with tourism for its basic reason for being, right? So it's taking ore that comes from the Iron Range, right? It may go out Superior Entry, whatever, but that draws people. It's just an amazing sight you got to see. And so then that feeds into the tourism, and I think it's great.
It is a blend. Davis Helberg, who used to head the Port Authority in Duluth, one of his favorite quotes, he's since passed, but one of his favorite quotes was, people come to see the boats don't come to see the people. and partly he was saying that because one of the, one of the tensions the city has is, back in the day when we were all industrial and there was no question that was our major base of everything, there weren't the kinds of, as Davis would have called it, the gentrification of the waterfront. So now you're pressuring in order to get the things that attract visitors.
Right.
You're pressuring that precious waterfront space sometimes out of being useful for an industrial use. So there is that kind of tension that we have now.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely in the past 20 years, there's been a major changeover in terms of arts and entertainment. You know, a big part of that has also been the explosion of breweries in town.
Are you saying that artists and entertainers drink?
No, I would never suggest such a thing.
Didn't you say something about a 16-hour fest at Wessel's? You know?
Yeah, and what's
you're
in
drinking
this coffee?
Coffee you
yeah,
said. Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Oh, there we go.
By
Connie's
Paul
holding up a bruise.
By Paul Lundgren,
and oh, explain this.
Paul.
This is radio. You can't just hold up a bag.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
So what do you got there?
Oh, it's in our current issue. We have a thing called Bruise and Blessings. Our own Paul Lundgren took a
who just happens to be here.
Who just happens to be here. Took a look around the lake, not just in Minnesota or Duluth, but literally around the lake, the culture of community service that's springing up at the same time around the new distilleries and cideries and breweries that we have around the lake.
Yeah, and so that's kind of connected to what I was saying is things have also changed in terms of fundraising around that new culture. And so if you're trying to raise money for your cancer society or your whatever, most people are turning to breweries now and saying, we want to use your space to hold our event. We want you to donate goods to our silent auction, that
kind
of thing.
One of our fine supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio, thank you, Earthwriter Brewery. Yes. I don't know if I was supposed to make an underwriter credit there or not. But we like you, Earthwriter. Well, we are talking to Paul Lundgren and Connie LeMay. I was talking about, of course, the integration of heavy industry, tourism. But some things are just environmental. Are we going to have ice caves this year?
Boy, I don't know.
You're the expert. Come on.
Yeah.
You're the person who turns them on or off.
Yeah, I was going to say, we did ask one time some of our local areas what kind of offbeat questions they get. And at some of the waterfall state parks, they get get calls that say, when do you turn the waterfall on, you know?
Well, like, I know that Kakabeka does get turned off. It's so far up there, it's, you know.
That's right. No, the ice caves are very difficult. Of course, they're the sea caves all year round, but the ice caves only in the winter. And
they go for a costume
that's
change.
Right.
But seriously, this year, I don't know. First of all, it's not winter. Did I say this already, right? We've had our third show on the weather in a row, and it's not winter.
I'm gonna just step in right there and argue.
I believe
firmly that
it is
Duluth does not flow on the cycle of seasons that the rest of the world does. And, you know, if you're in this part of the world, you're... spring is basically a month long or doesn't exist.
And it does not begin in March.
No. All right. So I want to come back to the ice caves because I like the ice caves. And for some reason, I feel like this is a year.
I don't know. You know, snow is not the precursor.
Chilly
weather is the precursor
to the
ice caves. So the question is, will we have enough really chilly weather? And, you know, the caves always out there get wonderful ice formations. That's not a problem. The problem is, will the lake freeze enough for you to walk out there without dying? And so will the cold snap be so long and prominent that you'll get enough to freeze up the lake around that area? And that hasn't been a given for ages. We've managed to have, I think, two good ice cave years where you could actually walk out there, maybe in the last 8 or 9 years. And it used to be much more regular. That's one of the, when you look at what's happening with the environment and changes in the environment, that's one of the canaries in the coal mine you can look at, is how did it used to be and how is it now?
You're also the third person in 3 weeks to start talking about climate change without saying the words climate change.
Did either of you go to the caves, 3 years ago or so?
No, it was 2014.
2014, that's how long it's been.
I was an editor who sent some reporters out there, and we took a picture, or somebody took a picture, and that actually is what kicked it off. I know another editor in this room right now would probably say they took the credit for it. But anyway, no, I did it, yep. Seriously, it wasn't actually one of our staff photographers. It was another staffer. He said, look at this. I said, that's the front page, you know. And the rest was history.
Connie, did you go out that year?
No, I didn't.
You didn't go either?
No.
So I also didn't go, and I think...
Then we're experts.
If you had ever gone before, that was the year to not go because you felt like... It was like going to the mall or something. There were so many people there.
Hundreds of thousands. I can't remember what the count.
And people from around the world were coming to visit. As we well remember, it was a shock to the system of cornucopia to try and handle that. And the Park Service had to deal with that in a way they hadn't before. But locally, again, it's one of those things where a lot of local people had always known that was there and were going to visit. And then suddenly the world discovered us. You
know? So this segues into a future past present tense story, or not story, but event. We are talking on Tuesday. Our program airs on Friday. You're probably listening on Friday or listening online later. But on Wednesday, you are giving, or you will have given, an award.
That's right. Lake Superior Magazine annually picks a group, an organization, or an individual to honor with what we call our Achievement Award. And it's intended to recognize folks who have made a significant contribution to the lake and its people. And this year for the award, we picked two organizations, the Madeline Island Ferry Line and the Apostle Islands Cruises, both because they're good business models, obviously, they're economically beneficial to their communities, but also because they have become so critical in so many ways to community contributions once again. Madeline Island Ferry, for instance, and they don't talk about it. It's nice to talk to the owners who say, well, of course we do that, you know, but people who have medical treatments that live on Madeline Island and need to come to the mainland regularly, they'll forego some of their fees for the ferry, or, you know, they're constantly working with community things. The Apostle Islands Cruises, one of the most recent examples of their aid, is sadly last year when the couple out on Michigan Island, not a couple but a family, their kayak overturned and mm-hmm. the father and two children were lost. And the mother was saved. But when that happened late at night, Apostle Islands Cruises got a call and they fired up one of their boats and went out to help search with everyone else. It's just one of the things you do in a community where boats are so important. And so on Wednesday of this week, we will have presented the physical award to the two groups on Madeline Island in the morning, and then in the afternoon, coming to the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. They're opening up their headquarters, even though they're technically closed for the winter, so that we can make the presentation to Apostle Islands Cruises.
Paul, you want to leave us with one more activity that you think people absolutely should attend?
Sure. Oh, the Lake Superior Ice Festival.
Yeah, there's
a
whole
is
thing,
still
Lake Superior. You write for the magazine occasionally.
It's true. Yeah, for many years
it's
now.
It's all about the lake, Ram, and we've told you that before.
The Lake Superior Ice Festival is toward the end of January, January 24th to 26th. And what are we on, about the fourth year of that now?
Yeah.
Something like that. So it's a somewhat new annual event. It happens the same time they have the Pond Hockey Classic, which has been going on longer than that, maybe 10 or 12 or more years that that's been going on.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the big winter event in Superior, is the Lake Superior Ice Festival. You know, a new thing that's been happening is, you know, we have all these annual events, the Bear Grease and this, that, and Snowcross, and the weather messes everything up. And Jim Richardson, the guy known around town as Lake Superior Aquaman, has sort of tapped into that in a great way, in that he just creates an event whenever, like whatever the conditions warrant. So right now it's Snow Fort City at Leif Erickson Park for about a week now. Just anybody can go down there and build a snow fort, build a sled run, you know, create your own fun. It's not organized. There's no money involved in it. He fully expects that, and it happens. You know, you're going to build these snow forts. Somebody's going to come and smash it, and then we'll build a new one. So it's an interesting new sort of way to look at it. Like, instead of we're going to do this on this date every year, you just look at what nature gives you and create something out of it.
From that year.
And so the ice caves are going to open up when?
No earlier than January or February. It's definitely a mid-winter kind of occurrence.
All right. Well, we'll write that on our calendars.
Pay attention
to Lake Superior Magazine. Yeah. And Perfect Duluth Day, right?
Yeah. And yes. should always be said, don't mess with Lake Superior. If they're not open, don't go out there on ice that is sketchy. And that's a year-round warning. Lake Superior is not to be trifled with.
All right. Well, on that note, thank you, Paul Lundgren from Perfect Duluth Day, and Connie LeMay from Lake Superior Magazine.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
Coming up, could you make a TV series out of a car dealership? We'll have that story after this.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love. You never take advice, but someday you'll pay the price, I know. I've seen it before, it happens all the time. Closing the door, you leave the world behind. Digging for gold, blowing away a fortune in feelings, but someday you'll pay.
Now, that sounds like a sitcom theme, doesn't it? Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. That little ditty is supposed to sound sitcom-ish because that's what it was written for. My guest in the studio is J.C. Dean. She's a trained Hollywood actress, and she's living here in Superior, or the Superior area?
Yes, I am.
All right. where she's the producer of A Dealership Christmas, which has just been picked up by Amazon Prime Video.
Thank you, Robin. I'm very happy to be here.
And now, did I get everything there right?
I live outside of Superior in Iron River.
Somehow I knew that, yes.
Okay. And I am a trained actress. However, I am not a trained producer.
Okay.
That was freelance and a lot of elbow grease in the school of hard knocks. So it's imperfect, but I'm still proud of what we accomplished.
All right. So as a producer, why in the world did you go from L.A., from Hollywood, to Superior? I'm wondering if you followed Arnold Schwarzenegger, who actually could call both of those places home, except he started in Austria, somehow got up here, and then he went to Hollywood. I don't think he's coming back.
Probably not. I'm going to guess he's not. I am familiar with Arnold Schwarzenegger's story, of course. However, I lived in this area prior to moving to Los Angeles. I actually moved to Los Angeles New Year's Eve 2004 on a red-eye flight, and I landed there New Year's Day 2005. With the intention to just stay.
It took you a year to get there.
Right. I traveled for a year. Talk about Twilight Zone. I only intended to be in Los Angeles for about a year with family and wound up just developing a life there. I didn't actually pursue the film industry until 2014. I actually had a small health breakdown around that time later, about a year into the industry, which is why I had to leave. My health wouldn't permit me to work full-time anymore. I needed to take a break to rest, recuperate. And so I came back near family in the Northland, which has much cleaner air than Los Angeles.
You noticed that.
You do. And when I go back to visit, I can taste the smog. There's a phrase among Los Angelinos, you don't trust air you can't see. And just the pure clean water, the air and things, it was a good move to be around family back in this area again.
Okay. So you're back in the area. And again, when you were in Hollywood, what sort of work did you do? You got into the industry?
I was just breaking in. In my first 3 months of trying out, I actually booked three small short films, which as an absolute nobody was a lot of fun. I was able to build a demo reel in my first year. I did not make it into anything that you would recognize. That's what everyone wants to know. Have you been in something I've seen? No. Okay. But I did have a phenomenal coach, and I'm not going to name drop, but several of my classmates have done some great work that you would recognize. And, I'm proud of them. And shout out to the Baron Brown class from 2014 and 15 there. You know who you are. But yes, it was quite an interesting time.
So I'm going to savor your great works right now, make people wait and listen to the entire program. you went out there for different reasons. So what made you gravitate toward the industry there?
Okay, now that's a funny story. I actually had suffered some bad communication between a friend and I, and she had the grace to call me out for coffee and talk to me about how the way I was communicating was not well perceived. She was very gracious. She's like, I think you need to work on this. I went, that's a really great point because I don't want to hurt people unintentionally. I really want to be careful with my words. And so I looked into this acting class, which I had heard a lot of professionals took. It was a 6-week introduction to the Meisner technique at the Baron Brown Studio. I was hooked. I absolutely loved the work. I loved my class. I loved my coach. And I went, I want to do this. I want to do this on the side the rest of my life. And then after, I was invited to join the class.
So you got into it for the ancillary benefits of good communication skills. All those things they probably tell you that you may not make it in Hollywood, but you're going to learn some great life skills. And you took it for the life skills. And voila, now you're making it in Hollywood. Sort of.
Well, sort of. Let's say completely honored by the reception people have given what I call our little show. It's been a lot of work, and it is a lot more success than I would have ever thought I would have this far removed from
Los
Angeles.
Before we go there, right, but your major success, what I was getting at, was the life skills. That was the reason you took it.
It is, right. And that is one thing. You're right. The instructors at Baron Brown would say repeatedly is, you know, no matter what happens, these skills you're going to use for the rest of your life. They would have, you know, attorneys, law enforcement officers, different people would go just for that course so that they could learn not only communication skills, but basic body reading and things so that you could understand communication better.
We're on the radio here, but the way you just moved your hand, and I'm doing my, I talk with my hands constantly. Hand movement 101. Okay.
It was unintentional.
All right. Well, you've accomplished that. So now the part that people have been waiting for, we have a clip that we're going to play. You have produced something here in the Northland, so tell us about it.
Yes, a dealership Christmas. So the concept was spawned when I first started working at Carry Toyota here in Superior as a finance manager part-time. And the regional finance instructor, if you will, he comes and trains the new people, teaches them about the products we do and all this. One of the phrases he said was, I'm going to pull back the curtain and let you see how things work on the inside of a dealership.
And Wasn't that in the movie Fargo?
I do not recall.
Hey, he wants undercoating. Yeah, okay. How the Vikings doing? Looks like a good game. Yeah, okay. Go tell them that there's no undercoating. I did not do that well, but you know what I'm talking about.
Well, actually, to tell you the truth, I haven't seen the film, but I've heard the quote. So, but when he said that, it struck me as so fascinating that almost everyone I know drives a car. Almost everyone I know has to buy a car or sell a used car or has been in a car at least. And yet it's something that holds this huge aura of mystery. It's like, ooh, the dealership. It's like that's where the salesmen are, you know. And we, I mean, car salesmen get the same rap as attorneys, you know, both of which there are good and bad of. And I just thought, how fascinating. I'm actually going to know the inside of how this works. And I am blessed to have worked at Carry, which I hope many other dealerships around here are like, but they're just a great place to work. Family-oriented, ethical, and fun. And I thought, after a week or two of seeing the things that happen there, I'm like, I would love to watch this as a show. I wonder how many people would love to watch this as a show. You know, just what is it like actually on the inside to be one of those people? We've seen, you know, The Office. We've seen a lot of shows, but no one's ever done one about a car dealership. Why not?
Well, you sent us a clip. I'm going to play that.
Hey, hey, hey. Look what I got.
Is that mistletoe? It's not very pretty, is it?
Well, it's a beautiful thing. It's all about love. Doesn't that make it a beautiful thing?
I prefer roses.
Well, maybe you'd feel a bit differently if it were hung above your desk.
Oh, no, no, no. My desk decorations are finished. And that would mess them up. Maybe you could hang it above the door.
Right. Right. Why didn't I think of that?
So there's a clip from a dealership Christmas produced by J.C. Dean, who is sitting here in the studio with me. You mentioned The Office earlier, and that sounds like a Christmas encounter that could happen at any office. What's indigenous to a dealership, and what makes a dealership so special that you were dying to put it in film, memorialize it?
I think possibly because the public perception is so misunderstood or so different from actuality. There's a certain camaraderie among people who work with automotive because few people understand what we do. I thought how cool it would be if we could show that to everybody in a fun way.
So what else do you have? What's a scene that's indigenous to a car dealership?
That would be a vehicle delivery, which is not what it sounds like. That's one of the first things I learned when I started working there. When you deliver a vehicle, it means the customer coming there, being shown all of the features of the car, getting their paperwork processed. I have so many customers say, wow, it's almost like buying a house, which probably a vehicle could be your second largest purchase of your life. Mm-hmm. Hopefully not only one in your life, but the actual vehicle delivery, the deliberation of choosing between all of these agonizing options. And then, you know, the thrill of getting your keys and driving away in your new car, which is then going to make memories. You know, how many of us have special memories that happen on the road, on a road trip, in our car, Or if you're like me, how many meals have you eaten in your car? You know, there's a lot of...
Actually, a new rule on the car I have now is no food in the car.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Robin.
I guess I'm not giving you a ride. Okay. So it isn't a reality show, right? I mean, or is it?
No, not even remotely.
Okay. This is scripted. Yeah.
It is very scripted, and not a single character in the show has a real-life counterpart. I intentionally wrote each character different from anyone who works there just to preserve privacy and make it pure fun for everyone to watch. Originally, we set out to write a sitcom. I discovered I'm much better at writing drama than comedy, which I've also learned is fairly common. Comedy is hard to write. So it is a dramedy. It is not a sitcom, just to set expectations there. There's funny moments. There's moments that hopefully make you cry. And all in a half hour.
Okay, great. Again, you have a scene that's kind of like any office scene, the mistletoe scene at Christmas. I've always thought that you could make a show about many, many different circumstances. I mean, we're sitting in a radio station right now. Of course, you know, this is going to date me. You're going to go, okay, boomer or whatever. But WKRP in Cincinnati is great, right? You know, it's a historical series and all that kind of stuff. People have done that. But one that's always fascinated me that I wonder why no one ever did is conventions and meetings. So I don't know if you've gone to many of them, but I have. Journalism conventions, conventions I've covered too as a journalist. And the most amazing thing to me is the hotels or the venues where they hold these.
Yes.
And I kid you not, they will be breaking down from one of our journalism conventions and then turning over to the gastroenterologist. And it's not just that. I mean, it's like this was in Boston, so the New England geriatric gastroenterologist, right? And believe it or not, there's like 1,000 or something like that.
Wow.
Show up. You know, I'm making that up.
But
I mean, the point is that, you know, there are all these different professions and associations that people join. And if you think about this really defines your identity, because you're not going to join this if you're not a gastroenterologist specializing in geriatrics in New England or something like that. So think of it from the point of view of the hotel staff. Wouldn't that make a great series? I mean,
it would.
Yeah. No one's done it.
You know, I've noticed.
I'm giving you a free idea.
I've noticed that some things are lopsided in the media that's produced because you have to write what you know. And a significant quantity of people who work in the arts have always worked in the arts. So people who write shows have never worked at a hotel. Hmm. A lot of people who write shows have never worked at a radio. Well, no. I mean, that is sort of
right,
it. But, you
right.
know, they've but, never worked at a hospital.
And it explains why there's so many shows about shows.
I know, which is actually wearisome.
It is weird.
To me.
Yeah.
And that's why you get so many shows or even films where the protagonist is a writer or a dancer or a singer or an artist, because this is what people know. And I know there's a few mainline actors. Emma Stone, I believe, is one of them, who says, I don't understand how people go from production to production without ever living. How do you tell your story? How do you become a character if you never live? And that's one of the things that I find exciting about the spread of independent film production, is we can hear different points of view. Not everything is filmed in Los Angeles anymore. Not everything even has to be filmed in Atlanta or New York or Chicago. We are getting stories and voices that people find interesting because they've never heard them before. How many people have ever been to a snow-laden northern Wisconsin? No, they watch it. They're like, wow, people live there?
And we're the ones who tell you if you got it right or not.
Yeah, this is true. But instead of dumping a bunch of fake snow on a mountain in California, we have the legitimate, which, granted, is a lot harder to film in because equipment doesn't work well in sub-zero weather.
Were you involved or participating in the Catalyst Film Festival?
I was not able to.
Okay.
I was intending to attend a seminar there, which got rescheduled on one of the days, so I was not able to attend at all. But it is exciting to think of the production that could bring to the Twin Ports.
What do you think the prospects are, though, of the Northland as actually a location? I mean, we love our area and all, but you're familiar enough with Hollywood to know that if they want a snowy Christmas scene, they'll create a snowy Christmas scene. And, you know, they won't necessarily come up here where the weather might suddenly, for whatever crazy reason, be 80 degrees. Well, maybe not 80, but 60, you know, when we're supposed to be doing Christmas. Because the weather here doesn't like to cooperate.
I would not call myself an expert by any stretch of the imagination. There are people who are far, far more experienced than I who could predict this better. On a grassroots practical level, our climate is going to be restrictive. And people from Los Angeles are not used to dealing with winter conditions or snow.
20
or,
below?
No, I mean, it's a foreign concept. Yeah. I remember telling people when I lived there that I had been in weather that was, say, 20 below. The response I got, this is a quote, "That's uninhabitable."
Well, actually, they're not that far off. And so, don't tell them.
Yes. Right? So while the thing in our favor is it's so beautiful, and there are so many old, well-preserved buildings, and it only takes about 10 days to shoot a feature film. Mm-hmm. You know, so I could foresee very busy spring, summers, and fall. And maybe for crew who has relocated to the area, if we get enough of a crew base and people who know how to do the work, I could foresee one or two indoor type shows such as, you know, plug the dealership, actually filming year round or mm-hmm. during those winter times when it's a lot harder to be outside. So the long and short is the possibility is exciting.
Great. Well, quite insightful. So you've got this picked up by Amazon Prime Video. What does that mean?
Well, and let me adjust that expectation. Amazon, per se, has not picked it up. Amazon has permitted it to be on their platform. So any independent artist who produces a show that meets certain specifications may submit. So we met all of the specifications for Amazon to allow it to stream on their platform, which is exciting, and it is a little bit of a notch saying, okay, yes, at least we made it that good. Amazon is not funding it. Amazon in no way is picking up the production of it.
Right.
Amazon is simply a universally recognized platform that now our show is available on, our pilot episode. So that is encouraging because now I've been able to send the link to different people that I'm trying to connect with in the industry who might have the capability to say we want to produce this and say, please take a look at our pilot episode, which is now streaming on Amazon.
Right.
Because that means, okay, at least we made a certain benchmark. It's watchable.
It also means you don't have to send out 100 jump drives.
There's that. That is a boon. As to the actual show, we settled on a female protagonist. And she is a newly single mother of a disabled son. So she has not been in the workforce since her son was born, and now it's necessary. And she lands at a dealership, very light Carrie Toyota. There's some fun, colorful characters. We have a maintenance guy that gets a lot of comments because he's probably the biggest doofus on the show, just incompetent and hilarious, but very likable. There's the rather lovesick young sales guy who's in the mistletoe clip, and he's gotten comments as well because he just can't seem to win. We have the guy who's referred to as Mr. Potter at one point in there, which is an homage to A Wonderful Life, one of my favorite Christmas films ever. And that is Gerald Nakota, who's the owner of the dealership, but who never shows up on screen. He's just this voice over the phone demanding better profits and better sales and money. So it's a well-rounded cast, I think. I'm proud of the Twin Ports for coming together to help me fill it out, because as a general rule, when you're in the early stages of production, you shouldn't try to pull together a project that needs 20 people. You should do something that needs maybe 5, and we did have 20 people involved in this in one stage or another, because we almost couldn't fill out the cast. I'm so used to the Los Angeles timetable. You put out a casting notice, people respond the next day, you cast within 3 days, you shoot next week. I had put the notice in Superior Telegram for people to come, like, in 3 days for casting. And, of course, we had a snowstorm that day. I had 2 people show up. So it was a borderline miracle we have a finished show, and I'm so grateful.
Congratulations for that. So, lastly, you said it was not based on real people.
Correct.
They're all fictional. What does Carrie Toyota think of it? Or do they even know?
Oh, they are well
aware. Hey, Carrie, if you're listening on the radio, ignore everything you've heard so far. There is no such person named JC. No, no.
They have definitely heard of it. They permitted me to turn the dealership upside down for 3 days last year. So a handful of them have seen it, and they do like it, I'm grateful to say. We have one real-life person from Carrie Toyota who actually walks through the opening scene, which is our general manager and co-owner, Chris Carrie. And then as he walks by in that opening introductory scene, that's actually his wife and children sitting in the chairs reading magazines. And those are the only real-life people who have a brief minute in the show, which is fun.
All right. Great. Well, thank you for joining us, J.C. Dean. She is the creator of A Dealership Christmas.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So if you're looking at your calendar, you know it's what? How many shopping days to Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, or any other reason you might have to give a gift? To truly get in the spirit and get inspired, let's take a look back. What's the most memorable gift you've ever received or given? Maybe it was something that made you laugh or touch your heart or touch somebody else's heart. Or something not quite appropriate for more sensitive listeners. But we'll take the chance, if you will. For next week's show, tell us about the most memorable gift you've ever received or given. We've got a special line waiting for your call. 715-394-8084. Once again, 715-394-8084. Tell us about the gift, who gave it, and why it was so special. Your recorded message must be less than 15 seconds, and we need to receive it by midnight on Monday, December 16th. Again, 715-394-8084. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. To get you in that gifting mood, that number again is 715-394-8084. We'll leave you with the King's Singers.
Tis the gift to be simple, tis the gift to be free, tis the gift to come down where you ought to be. And when we find ourselves in a place just right, 'twill be in the valley of love and delight. Ourselves in a place just right, 'twill be in the valley of love and delight.